I have looked at no less than, well, let's look. There's Network Flight Recorder. There's Real Secure. There's those horrible NT-based ones from Raptor. sorry. Accident Technologies. They don't call them that for nothing. And they basically all have a problem. None of them are integrated. They yell at you, and they scream, and they don't do anything. And more often than that, I regard an IDS largely as a DOS against the operator. It's what you call a human denial of service. When you have a human being can only take in so much finite information. Well, an IDS, I had the misfortune of looking at Real Secure, and it has some nice features if you want to snoop people's IRC traffic. But the problem with it is it's noisy. In one day, I got, just with the default set, I got 300 email messages. Do you know what I did? I created a filter that automatically sends them to the trash because I don't really care about all these things that aren't really happening or they're happening wrong or they're just dumb. It's like basically IDS technology is like a virus scanner, but it only scans. It doesn't clean, it doesn't quarantine, and it doesn't do anything. Who cares if you have a virus if you can't clean it? So anyways, this is why I, and a guy named Chris Kuth, a really, really, really sharp Canadian fellow who isn't here, he's the OpenBSD portion of this. I use OpenBSD. I am not a god in it, so please forgive me if I might spell it wrong occasionally, or, you know, I'm not a BSD god, so please forgive me for that. Anyways, I'm going to begin now. A note of caution. Automated response systems can cause more problems than they solve. These things that I am presenting you are nothing more than guidelines. Denial of service in yourself is very easy. Enemies more clever than yourself can make life most miserable. Nothing replaces vigilance, defense in depth, keeping servers patched, and being sneaky. Again, the reason I put this note of caution is because what I'm suggesting, I thought of it just today, was basically I'm giving the equivalent of SAMs. We now have radar, which is IDS, but now you have SAMs, which you can launch against incoming aircraft. But if suddenly your SAM thinks that your air traffic controller is a target, things are going to get in trouble. So this is just a note of caution that what I'm describing and the flexible response systems which I will be describing in here can cause more problems than they cure. So with that said, I'm going to continue. Don't say I didn't warn you. Deficiencies of typical IDSs. They do not adapt and consider multiple factors. They only respond with things like resets or blocks. They don't do anything, they just scream. And they do not automatically stop an intruder. One of the largest things I've heard here is automated attack. Well, why not automated defense? Or even better, automated defense, and if necessary, I don't advocate the use of offensive force, but flexible response I do advocate. And instead of just dropping a packet, what if suddenly I start logging, let the intruder think they've got in, and reroute them dynamically to a honeypot as they're attacking my IIS server? That's one kind of a dynamic response that you can do instead of just I'm reset packet. I mean, that just seems lame to me. I mean, with the AI technology that we have, with all the clever and really cool hacks I'm seeing, why can't we have clever responses? They're also expensive. An average IDS sensor will run you between $5,000 to $15,000 per sensor. Now, I don't mind making people like NFR rich. I don't have any problem against that. They have a reasonable product. At least it's not based on NT. But when I see that it's that much, and I say I want a place, I work in a trading environment, and we have, I think at last count, at least 14 different networks, and on like 15 different vendors. And that's a lot of places where I'm going to place sensors. At $15,000 a sensor, we'll just use that's a lot of money. Now, people who are traders hate to spend money. They love spending it if there's equities and risk. You know, give me my money. But ask them to spend $10,000 on a firewall product, and they what's my ROI? And then you say, it makes you feel safe, and then they laugh at you. So this is kind of basically for the cost of a sensor, $400 with a Celeron processor with a, if you want to really be fancy, buy yourself a $500 Intel EtherExpress Pro with the four ports, so you can mount it, monitor up to four ports per sensor. Now, if you don't have enough CPU, well, that's a different question, but it's definitely an option. The signatures, which are the heart of all IDSs today, with the exception of anomaly-based, are not updated fast enough. I may be wrong in this, but from a year ago when I was dealing with ISS, they updated quarterly, maybe more than that now, but it was roughly quarterly. NFRs, I think, were a little better monthly, and I don't really know how RealSecure does it. I haven't actually looked at theirs. But even if it's a month, it's too long. All of a sudden, all these clever people here come out with, say, 17 variants on a new exploit for, God forbid, IIS, and, you know, Unicode or, you know, some kind of a thing, because Microsoft, when they patch things, they just patch the one thing. Oh, it's a 256 byte off, but not a 257 byte offset, because, you know, I mean, they don't patch very well. So basically, because of the fact, and this is another limitation, is signature-based IDSs do not detect things that they don't have signatures for. So it's very nice to be able to have other people all over the net who are relatively intelligent writing signatures. You're also locked into a closed and expensive solution. Some of them do have languages, but like for instance the NFR, the key exchange is absolutely a nightmare. They use 56-bit DES, and the keys never change ever. It's a shared secret between the client and the server. I mean, it's not even public key. It's not even like 128-bit because, we couldn't figure out how to get the license export or whatever. And I don't like that. I don't like being boxed in. I like having flexibility. I like being able to be sneaky. And a lot of times, it's very difficult to be sneaky with a lot of these commercial vendors. Now, they do have their place. I very much feel that if you're in a Fortune 500 or trading firm or financial firm like I am, you probably need both, simply because the people upstairs really like to spend money in some senses, which is counteractive to what I said, but you have your one $15,000 sensor and your 30 snort sensors, and so they kind of think that, you're guarding the gates with a real one, and really when snort's doing the work in the background. Not that they know that, of course. It's also harder to be clever and integrate data across multiple sources. All of the IDSs have woeful user interfaces. One of the gentlemen yesterday was talking about horrible user interfaces. Well, IDSs have everybody beat. I've never seen any of them with decent user interfaces, especially the alert screens. There's too many of them too quickly for a human to absorb. I mean, I can read like Moby Dick in a day, and I don't like to see 7,000 alerts paging by me at, 2,400 baud even. It's too fast. So, anyways. Here's my philosophy for AirIDS. Basically, an intrusion detection system should be able to intelligently respond to data from a variety of sources. Hosts, networks, multiple points of view, in other words, for instance, from the point of view outside the firewall, point of view on the DMZ on the firewall, point of view on my people going out to the firewall. Because for those of you that NAT, you know that telling what traffic is coming out as it's NATed behind a firewall makes finding out who's really downloading all those Napster files very difficult. Also, there's hosts. Basically, the hosts are really important because network traffic by itself doesn't allow you to correlate. Whereas with host stuff, I'm talking things like you have an NT host running tripwire with a syslog monitor with auditing, reporting to backlog, or there's 101 of those things for NT. And this is the sneaky part, and I don't really mention it here. You actually construct, because you have an IDS, you send the port 540 to nowhere, but of course you reconstruct it on the IDS because you're listening to UDP port 540 bound for a non-existent IP address for any of you that want to be sneaky with syslog. So the attacker comes in, ha, 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 he's stupid. He doesn't have any syslog server, but yes, he does. You just don't know he does. Anyways. Routing and switching gear. Those are just some of the sources. Sources can even be, routers, switches, firewalls. And all kinds of other data sources. I'm trying to be all inclusive. Am I speaking loud enough? How is this? Okay, I'll speak loudly from now on. Continued on the philosophy. AirIDS should never denial of service in its own network. Denial of servicing is a very bad thing, especially when you're doing it to yourself. An IDS should be mostly open components. I said that because I don't really know what license I'm wanting to go with. GPL is really nice, and then there's OpenBSD, and there's all these silly licenses, and I don't really know which one. But I want it to be mostly open, because that way people can work on it and realize that they're not going to make me rich. I mean, that's not the object of this project. The object of this project is to provide a community-based IDS that doesn't suck. I mean, that's basically what this whole... So anyways, that is the project goal. You can tweak it because it's open source. You've got the source code. You've got the licensing. And documentation's another thing. I'm going to make sure that the documentation is damn good, because I hate it when you download these things and it says compile it this way and you do and it doesn't work. I mean, that is frustrating. So if you write documents, write them correctly, or don't write them and let them figure it out for themselves so they're not fooled into thinking that your documentation actually works. You can use it in ways the original authors never imagined. There are things that you can do with Snort and Perl and PHP and SSH and all these open things, and you can combine them in a system that is far greater than the original intent of any of their authors. I mean, using SSH to write dynamic firewall rules is not something I've heard of. I've heard of it being done on the host, but not being done from a central command processor, which I'll get into. And finally, it's cheap. Not cheap in terms of labor, but even with these commercial IDSs, you're going to spend months tuning your network. I don't care what anybody says. You're going to have to know what your traffic is. You're going to sit down there with Ethereal and TCP dump, and you're going to have to look at your networks, or you're going to have a useless IDS, because you have to tune it. And everyone talks about that, but no one really stresses. Tuning will take you a quarter. I mean, if you're on a relatively large network, monitoring anywhere from 3 to 6 network points, you're talking a lot of time. I did a complete network evaluation of just 6 network segments. It took me a month. I mean, because you're going through raw packet data, you're looking at stuff, you're having to talk to programmers. Why are you using port 56789 through 60,000 for your application? I mean, I also use 123456 and 678910. I mean, there's these human factors that you have to throw into the mix. You just can't go with a protocol analyzer and say, we use all these ports, and not know who they are, and be able to intelligently look at what they are. So I do want to really, really, really stress the human factors involved in this system are probably the most important. Technologically, it's kind of a neat idea, but the human factors are the singularly most important. Because, if you've got developers working on programs and you don't know what they do, and you're, it's like, oh my God, why are they opening 50,000 connections per second? Well, we're getting quotes from AT. You know, I mean, there's those kinds of things that you have to know about your network. So anyways, I'm going to continue. An IDS should not annoy. When I get an alert from my IDS at 3 in the morning, it had better well be an alert. I don't want to get woken up at 3 in the morning to know that some idiot's trying to run the newest IIS exploit on me. I patched it. Have a nice day. An IDS should be completely out of band so it is undetectable. Now, I will admit I have not researched into the implications of using a bridging sensor. I'm sure that they're detectable. I'm not saying they're not. But to your average attacker on the outside, the only way I know of, and please correct me, the only way I know of to detect a bridging sensor would be latency. Because it's just sending them along. I mean, because it's a layer 2 device. It's OpenBSD. So as far as I know, I actually did some measurements, and the only way I could tell by looking at the packet was that there was a tenth of a millisecond delay between the time that it got between the two interfaces. So it's kind of hard to detect. The management portion of it, I like to have out of band, because a lot of times there are flaws. No matter what you do, you probably will make a mistake. So if the IDS's management console and all the components are located on a completely out-of-band network, there is no way that anyone, or it's very difficult, for anyone to get in and hack your IDS and look at all the beautiful signatures. It's less convenient for the admins, but so what? They get off their butts and they walk to the server room, or you patch it into your cubicle and do it that way. I mean, at least it's somewhat more secure. When they cut across? Well, that's the advantage of using bridging. because there's no IP. I mean, yes, there certainly are things they can do to make your active response act against you. That kind of attack is quite possible. But the sensor itself doesn't have an IP on either side. I mean, there are certainly certain kinds, you could probably try to denial of service it and whatnot, but there are other preventative measures that we can take to minimize and limit that. IDS should have at most one or two decision-making points. Now, you do start running into a problem with this in terms of performance if you're monitoring large amounts of networks using, essentially, I'm advocating the use of a centralized SQL database on one computer with probably four or five processors on a really big network, simply because it's less places for things to go wrong. It's less places for attack. If you keep some of the componentry down, it's simplicity. So you want to keep it as simple as possible, and yet at the same time maintain the flexible response. So it's very important to have one or two decision-making points. An IDS should work in conjunction with other protection systems. Firewalls, the hosts themselves, and routers. They should be able to dynamically talk to these components and, if necessary, take action based on the input of multiple sources. And again, the whole I'm trying to advocate is a union of all these technologies that everyone says, like one people say network-based, one people say host-based. I say both in conjunction because neither of them by themselves is sufficient. An IDS's evidence should be admissible in court. There are a lot of really neat technologies like worm drives and those, if you've ever had the cool, those HP jukeboxes with the flip disks. And those are worms. They're unalterable media. Those packets have been written and logged to those things. And the raw packet should be available. The problem with basically any of the sensors is you don't have the raw data. So somebody who's in court can say, well, your tool sucks. So you can say, okay, here's the raw data. And, you know, here's what the conclusions we can do, and you can actually look at the raw data. So having a packet vault is a very important thing. And IDS should be OS agnostic. That means it doesn't matter what OS, it has to work on all of them. I mean, not necessarily the sensors or not necessarily the actual hardware that runs it, because I just can't really advocate running most of these things on Windows. It's just too scary. I mean, I was trying to secure an IIS server. I was reading, the stupid thing runs as local system. There is nothing I can do. It runs as local system. So if there's any new problems, it's got root. So just put a reverse proxy in front of it and be done with it. I mean, that's really the only way I know how to secure IIS. It's just put a squid proxy in front of it and just filter out Unicode and get rid of all those IIS things and just send it. And of course you get rid of NoOps too. That way, well, you don't have a choice when you have a CIO and silly developers who, it's a reality of working in business is that I hate IIS and I managed to stop Exchange. I'm quite proud. But I could not stop IIS because a lot of the kids coming out of college today, dare I say, use Microsoft Foundation classes and Visual Basic for their programming, and lots of these people will be hired because A, they're cheap, and B, the only thing they know is Microsoft. And so weaning those people from that process is kind of hard. So for any of you who doubt what I'm saying, unfortunately, Microsoft is a necessary evil, and it does keep us employed. Just think of it that way. Microsoft is so insecure that we will always have a job. Anyways. and yes, I know, I'm not being OS agnostic. Oh, well. The IDSs, yes. An IDS should allow the analysis, an analyst, the flexibility of looking at past data. This is the snort portion of it. I haven't really talked about, I'm not really going to get into the specifics of using snort and acid and all these other things, but those are some of the, all this is at this point, the only thing that's real is the flexible, is the ability to have a command processor respond to input from a snort sensor and the concept of a bridging sensor. Most people just have sensors. This is why have a sensor when you have bridging code. So not only is my sensor, it's a firewall. So I happen to be running Checkpoint, and there's no, that new horrible RDP attack. My sensor, basically, I can put the firewall rule, block all RDP from the outside. My Checkpoint never sees it, and I don't have to worry about patching and causing my network to crash. Because I'm sure you've all had upgrade fun anyway. Components of RIDS. This is actually, can someone tell me in an hour, because I'm just going to kind of take a 5-minute break for everybody, because a lot of times you go on with these 2-hour presentations and, you know, you get kind of bored. So I'm going to take a 5-minute break at after the hour mark, and then I will begin immediately after the 5-minute break, though, so if you're thinking of leaving or whatever, you'll need to be back here then. Anyways, so the components of RIDS. The stealth sensors, they are bridging firewalls with OpenBSD, and to be correct, we use it's PF rather than the other one because of that licensing thing. I still haven't figured that all out, but anyways, the centralized data gatherer, the sensors and hosts report to this. Typically, this is going to be an industry standard database, whether it be MySQL or Postgres. Problem with MySQL is if you have a lot of data coming in, it doesn't do transaction queuing, and so you're just going to be in trouble because MySQL will just choke because it does blocking I/O when you start getting multiple data sources. So you've got, you know, 17 snort sensors reporting to one database, and all of a sudden, you know, MySQL just can't handle it. So at this point, it's just a database. I'm not going to say which, but a database which can handle transaction queuing and can do threads, because you're going to have to do threads in order to keep up with the speed of the network. And I'm not even talking about gigabit. I mean, anyways. A historical comparison module. This is what I regarded as an anti-annoyance feature. If you have a site, say, in, well, let's not say China, because everybody said China today. Let's say Russia. You have all these annoying Russians that are probing your network and trying to hack you and get their elite ware sites up. Well, I see this and I say, you know, there's about 5 or 6 IPs and I verify them. Because you really don't want to react based on historical stuff, because machines do exactly what you tell them. And if they see a particular host 6 times denial of service, well, we all know what spoofing is, don't we? Anyways. So the historical comparison module is more for a human to look at. Say, are these hosts repetitive offenders? Are they doing port scans? Are they doing what I consider to be hostile traffic? I'm very much an advocate of what I call geographic profiling. If a particular geography is causing you problems and you have no business receiving web traffic, for instance, I work in a Chicago-based trading firm. There's no way that anyone from China should be looking at my website. I'm sorry. We were proprietary markets. There's no business reason for me to be even accepting any traffic, except maybe email, and even that questionable, from these hostile sites. I recently saw a lot of these HTTP scans from the Beijing and other areas, and I just got tired of it, so I just said 209.*.*.* block, and all my port scans stopped. So anyways, yes, I know it's racial, but sorry. Anyways, the command rules processor for active filtering. This is probably the most complex part of the whole thing. It's a separate module which would have to use an expert-based system to make intelligent decisions. You just can't have something, if I regular expression this signature, do that. You can do that, but you're going to have some very dangerous rules if you do. So what I'm proposing, I don't have yet. I've got a couple people, hopefully in the audience, who are really good at expert system stuff. I need a database and what we can call a response library. We have not only a database of hostile actions, but a response library that can talk to the other modules so that it reacts intelligently to threats, intelligently and automatically. And with all the processor power that we have these days, why not have a really big expert system? I mean, with a gigahertz Pentium costing less than $500, there's no excuse not to. So anyways, this command rules processor, what it does fundamentally is it takes the input, consults with the expert system, and decides what it should do. For instance, I'm running a trading firm. I start seeing HTTP scans and hostile IIS activity from X, you know, site X. I'm running Tripwire at the same time. I guess we'll run it hourly because we can't run it too much because on just one binary, because otherwise you run out of processors on poor little NT boxes. And basically, all of a sudden, I see this traffic, and then on the host, the trading application binary is suddenly modified. Now, this is probably a bad thing. It means that my trades are no longer trustworthy. So that warrants an immediate response. So it consults with it and it says, oh, this host, that problem, shut the connection. Doesn't matter where it's from. The reason why is because it is such a catastrophic condition, it is better to stop the trading than it is to go on trading with, you know, unknown data. And, you know, again, it depends on the site policy. This is where the human factors come in. You have to know what an unacceptable condition is and, oh, be sure to translate that to your manager. Say, if this happens, we will lose connectivity. Or if this happens, this will happen. You have to be very clear in the policies and written procedures that you have in your organization. Again, if you're just doing it for yourself, don't worry. But if you're in a Fortune 100 or, you know, banking or clearing corporations like I've been in, if you suddenly stop service and you're clearing $1 billion a day, you don't have a job very long. So you do have to bear these things in mind. The command processor essentially uses SSH to talk to the sensor on an out-of-band network. Now, you say, why do you bother? Well, we all know about the problems with SSH. I mean, it's certainly it's better than Telnet, but even with version 2, there are problems. If it's out-of-band, well, first of all, I've got an encrypted transmission, which is good. But now it's an out-of-band encrypted transmission, so that an attacker through the internet, I will say that, through the internet or an outside or even inside without physical access to my out-of-band network, cannot subvert the system. Now, it is relying on physical security of the boxes. Obviously, you don't want to leave it out in your kiosk area. But, anyways, what it does is it sends an SSH command, you know, pf block in source my web server if it sees that event, and then send out a page. That is one example of a kind of response that the command processor could do. Another kind of response that you could do would be, say, I just see suspicious web traffic, you know, like, why are they doing $100 million trades when all we do are, you know, like 4 lots and 8 lots, you know, of trades? So basically, it can look for, you know, you can actually have like a little processor. And then what you do is you start recording those packets to your worm drive or something there. And in case there's fraud, and we have SEC, unfortunately, we're trading, so we have to worry about that, we can admit that and, if necessary, convict this person based on the packet vault. So you can do more intelligent, and you want the raw packet data again, because it's the raw most form of the data. It's not been distilled, it's not been altered, and in a court of law, as far as I can understand, it's the raw data that's probably more important. Although the distilled data is very important, but the raw data is a vital aspect of this. The anti-shoot ourselves in the foot module contains hosts not to block. For instance, it would contain our infrastructure servers. Never block my DNS. Never, you know, don't do dumb things like block my partners. You know, if I start seeing hostile traffic from a partner, scream, but don't block them. You know, and notify the partner. Maybe send a message to the, you know, the sysadmin at the remote site saying, by the way, it looks like I'm receiving port scans from your IP. Can you check to make sure you haven't been hacked? You know, and I wouldn't have to do anything. The whole system would do it for me. And that's what I'm talking about with flexible and intelligent response. It doesn't denial of service my partners or my, you know, my web server can talk to my DNS server. Oh my God, port scan from DNS, block! End of game. I mean, you don't do DNS anymore and, you know, anyways. Finally, the last one's kind of a pipe dream. I just threw this in. The idea of a heuristic or learning mode to make configuration easier. It'd be kind of nice if you could just have, like, you'd fill out these little questionnaires about your network, and it could come up with a fairly basic set of rules that would actually be applied, because most people are not going to have the expertise to go with TCP dump on their networks and do things. So kind of like those silly wizards you see that ask you things and to kind of, to some degree, have a very limited response system. Like, what is your web server? What is your DNS server? Who are your partners? And do you? And if I see an attack from one of these, what do you want me to do? That kind of a heuristic. It's not really heuristic, but the learning mode. I was thinking of, if ever you've used Mason, it dynamically watches the traffic and then just automatically generates rules based on that. It's very dangerous, but very convenient. So it's just kind of a thought. I don't really know what to do with it, but anyways. So the stealth sensor, it's a transparent bridging approach. is used. This allows for undetectable monitoring. Well, relatively undetectable. I'll say that because I'm not an expert on bridging transparent firewalls, but it should be relatively undetectable. Traffic flows can be stopped because it's also a firewall, redirected or even reflected back at an attacker. I don't know. I kind of like the new IP. This is a Linux plug. I kind of like the reflect attack, the mirror target on the new IP tables is kind of cool. But anyways. Finally, it makes it difficult to attack the IDS itself. It's bridging. I would love to see some attacks on bridging IDSs. That would be a very interesting paper. I haven't seen any to date. I've seen nothing that really that talks about it other than denial of servicing them. Finally, it doesn't prevent fooling the filtering module into doing something bad or stupid. Again, if the rules are improperly made, an attacker can send packets at you knowing that you have the system in place and really make life miserable. The sensors have three interfaces, one for management and two for bridging. EtherExpress NICs, I've heard a lot of banter about which one's the best. I personally use three comms, but I have noticed high CPU utilization. The EtherExpress, Chris basically recommended them. My friend who's a Cisco person said he saw like five times the throughput on the new ones. You don't go with the old ones, but the new ones. So anyways, and as you know, CPU utilization and bus mastering and all these other things are quite important on an IDS. Sensors should be based on a reliable and secure operating system. OpenBSD, as far as I know, is one of the more secure operating systems on the planet. I will preface that mainframes are more secure, but anyways, they are. It takes 30 minutes to enter a user. Anyways, 26 transaction codes before you can even log in. OpenBSD is relatively easy to set up due to its minimalist philosophy and secure design. For me to go through the package selection on SUSE or any of the Linuxes takes the better part of an hour and a half to 2 hours because there's 4,000 packages in SUSE alone. And I think in the new Mandrake there's like 3,500. And the default package selections are stupid. So you have to go through every package and so anyways, BSD is just install it default, turn off the, you know, they for some reason they leave RPC open, just turn off the RPC and it's pretty much done. OpenBSD, Snort, Acid, and the database work. The rest is going to be a project. Anyways, let's continue. Let me continue. For those of you who are here, this is a theoretical talk. I do have some practical application, but unfortunately I'm not a programmer. I'm okay at network stuff, but I'm not an expert. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get together, like I said, a community-based project where we can get all these different people with different expertises for non-profit, because if it's for profit, it just everyone becomes selfish. And then suddenly it just doesn't work. So this is kind of an altruistic vision of having a community-based intrusion detection system that kicks everybody else's ass. I mean, that is really what the vision of this project is. And so at the end, there's all kinds of resources, and I will continue with that. Yes? You can rewrite packets, though. You can rewrite the packets in transit between bridge 1 to bridge 2. Anything you want. That's the whole point. Use dev random. I don't know. Oh, sorry. The question was, is if you don't have a IP address, how do you rewrite packet headers? And I basically said, well, you rewrite the source address and destination address any way you want because it's PF. You know, it's low level. You've got raw sockets. That's the whole advantage of the OS. You write any source or whatever. I mean, use his own source address if you want to be nasty. Anyways, sensor descriptions. Sensors communicate relevant traffic via out-of-band network to reporting module. Sensors can receive commands via SSH version 2. Version 1 is hopelessly flawed. I don't recommend using it unless you have no choice. It's better than Telnet, but avoid 1 if you can. If you do use it, turn on compression. At least it makes finding the passwords a little harder. Sensors can dynamically block, allow, ignore, reflect, or redirect, or log traffic. I didn't put that in there. Sensors can also send out syslog, basically the covert channel thing I talked about, where you just have all your hosts on the DMZ basically sending to a mythical syslog server, but you're actually recording the syslog traffic as it comes in and reconstructing it based on that. It's for the event logging and for some of the host-based stuff that you need. Sensors will send data to an industry standard SQL server. And one thing I should put in there, sensors will send data in a standardized format. Or at least there will be some kind of a... I originally was just going to use Snort, but then I thought, well, why don't we use all these other IDSs too? And so just basically somehow parse their alerts into a one-to-one equivalence so that you get some kind of a standardized database among all the different of all the different vendors. Obviously, this is a huge task, but it's a nice idea. Data will be encrypted. I know it's an out-of-band channel, but a lot of people, well, out-of-band networks are pain in the ass. So let us use Zebedee. It's a very nice blowfish encryption. It works on Windows. It works on Unix. It stands for zlib compression blowfish encryption. And it's really fast, and it's much faster than SSH. It supports keys between servers. And so basically you send your database connection through an encrypted Zebedee tunnel to the sensor. So you don't have to, but for the truly paranoid, it's there. Centralized information repository description. The host is hardened. Basically, you know, you've done the sensible things, taking out unnecessary services, no compilers, etc. Runs a journaling file system. The nice thing about journaling file systems is if you turn off the power, you don't lose your database. Well, guess what we have? We have a very large database, and they don't take kindly to power outages. And to be honest, EXT2 kind of scares me with databases because it's fast, but it's just kind of squirrely at times. So I personally use a SUSE with Riser. Some people say it's unreliable. I've been running it for a year and a half now and haven't lost a single file on a 100-gigabyte file system, so it's pretty reasonable. It's on a UPS and obviously has the UPS connector connected to it, so if you lose power, it shuts itself down gracefully. Now, this means that if you have a server, you make sure that you buy yourself a little 400, you know, APC 400, and it runs your server for 2 minutes. That's silly. Buy yourself a big APC, and then your database can take as long as an hour to shut down, if it's Oracle, God forbid. And so you need to make sure that when you get a UPS, you get one that's big enough for the wattage. Look at the wattage or the ratings, and do a test. You know, before you have all your important data on it, to unplug it and see how long it lasts under load. I mean, I know what the manufacturer is saying, volt hours say, but batteries go bad. You know, there's all these other factors in them. It's regularly backed up. When I say it, the only thing I really refer to is the database. If you're using MySQL, it's really easy. Shut down the database and tar up the directory. With other types of databases, it's a little more complicated. And I'll be honest, I'm not really a database guru, so I don't know. Figure it out. It's on an out-of-band network again. It doesn't have to be, but I recommend that it is. Just because of the fact that it's such vital information, and from a privacy standpoint, when you're talking about deploying a system like an IDS, especially in universities, or you're recording all the traffic, and not only that, but you have a permanent record of all the traffic. The privacy concerns of protecting that kind of information are huge. I mean, even if it's the company's data, the politics and the levels of problems that occur with this kind of information are huge. I've seen people fired. I've actually had to have people fired as a result of sensor traffic. I mean, and it's a really hard thing to do. I mean, someone you like, and all of a sudden, you know, they're doing kiddie porn and it's against the policy, and have a nice day. You know, go feed your children. I mean, you know, it's pretty unpleasant. I mean, it's just unpleasant. And so it has to be, I think, just because of the fact that it's repositorying all the information, it has to be on an out-of-band network. It doesn't have to be, but again, because of the ethical concerns in the kinds of data that we're collecting, I think it's in your best interest to do that. Currently, the only OS that does most of this out of the box is SUSE Linux. Mandrake will do it. I don't know if there is a journaling file system for BSD out of the box. If there is, great. Slackware? Okay, well, thank you. I haven't used Slackware since 92, so please excuse me. Okay. Yeah, and Dead Rat, it's better in the 7.1, but but it unfortunately, I just don't like the way they do things. They don't use any kind of standards. They use that stupid check config thing to turn things on and off, and just all their RCs are in the wrong places, and I don't like figuring that out. So that's just me. Now, you were saying you're worried about a journaling file system, but you're recommending RAID 0. Well, that's why we have backups. RAID 0, I'm sure you're all Uber hackers, but just in case there aren't any, RAID 0 means you stripe the disk across two, so you have basically twice the speed, but half the reliability. Because if either of the disks go bad, you lose everything. So, but you have a really fast disk. For less than $400, I can have a 160 gigabyte disk, which will do 50 megs a second on an IDE channel. Mind you, that's IDE, that's not SCSI. We're not talking Ultra 166 or Sun hardware or 64-bit PCI. I mean, 50 megs a second. That's a lot of bandwidth. You're almost saturating the bus at that point. The central has a host-based firewall. In the case of Linux, you would be using, I would recommend IP chains until IP table stabilizes, but IP tables is really nice because you could do MAC address checking. You can do MAC address checking, you can do all kinds of flexible response, and basically what it says is even though you're on an out-of-band network, only these hosts can connect to me. So even if they get physical access or tap into the line because you're not using fiber because most of us can't afford the fiber cards to our desktop. Anyways, so basically a host-based firewall. It doesn't change. It's just these things can connect to me on these ports and whatever. Sensors and syslog reconstruction occurs on this host. Basically, the syslog input is fed directly to this host, and in parallel to the system, I just like to do a tail on the text file for any immediate responses that need, you know, right now, this is just one event that doesn't need to be correlated that's catastrophic or needs to be responded to. It just gives you a really nice way to write a quick and dirty Perl script to send an emergency rule out to a sensor firewall if you need to. Again, the central, basically it talks to the central command processor. Stores all the data, syslog, IDS data, host alerts, and TCP dumps of all, I would say not all data, but all relevant data. Obviously, if you're not doing certain kinds of things, you don't need to monitor everything, but figure out what you need in your policy and dump that to raw packets. The historical comparison module, it talks to the centralized information repository, checks to make sure that all the data coming for, it looks for repeat offenders. And it checks for port scan repetitions from hosts. It's largely for nuisance users or hosts. It can also be used to detect stealth port scans. Again, imagine a database that you never erase. I mean, suddenly you have every person who's ever scanned you since, like, last year. I mean, that's very powerful, especially if you start getting into data mining. The command rules processor. Again, this is the heart of the IDS. It dynamically adjusts the rules based on attacks in real time. It doesn't do dumb things because of the anti-shoot ourselves in the foot module. It sends rule changes via an encrypted channel to the sensor. It constantly communicates with the centralized information repository, and it can interact with firewalls. This last part is as if a lot of the commercial firewalls, Checkpoint, Sunscreen, ANS Interlock, if anyone has used that firewall, it's like way in the past anyways, basically have scripts that you can dynamically add rules. So you can actually, on your main firewall, do things. And again, it's just thrown in as kind of it's an integration feature that you can actually do with your firewall. Of course, it requires command line facilities on the firewall to work. Command rule processor continued. It is able to react to network event and host events. Compares and correlates the results from multiple sensors to see if sophisticated attack is taking place, and it contains a flexible response. In other words, if certain conditions are critical, cut off all access. If only non-critical, perhaps page or log all of the suspicious packets from the hosts. How am I doing for time? Okay, thank you. Again, the command rule processor, it can block problematic hosts via historical module. Basically, these are ones that are not in the anti-shoot ourselves in the foot module, so I will not be blocking my DNS server. Can actually tell what is happening on the host itself. I like Tripwire because combined with a lot of other techniques, it can tell you if a file has changed. Now, the problem with Tripwire is if an attacker gets in and modifies or gets rid of the Tripwire process, obviously you're out of luck. But a lot of times, if you're sneaky and rename the Tripwire executable write.exe, I mean, a lot of people probably are not going to figure out that you have Tripwire. I mean, and you can actually move things to non-default locations. Now, granted, it's security through obscurity, but everything that you can do to slow down your attacker gives you more time to defend. And that's what the whole game is basically to increase the amount of expense, time, and effort to get into your systems. Again, Unix syslog, I kind of like syslog. A lot of people say it's bad. It's so universal. And as long as you do it out of band, people aren't going to denial of service you. It's harder anyway. I mean, they can't like spoof a host and then go in. Now, with the thing that I described, someone could conceivably send out bogus UDP streams from a host. You can use things like syslog next generation, but I find that it's kind of buggy, and like it has memory leaks, and it's gotten better. You know, the cryptographic checksums are very helpful. But again, if they've compromised your host, they probably have access to your keys anyway, so why worry? Custom alerts. Again, there's different kinds of ways to be alerted. There's, like, Snort has the SMB server message block for your Windows users. There's pagers. There's all kinds of different ways. This is kind of an interesting thing I just thought of. It's kind of a random thought. But instead of representing a host as something impersonal, like have a picture of something, like a person, and say that someone denial of service is your web server. All of a sudden, like a bullet hole appears in the head. I mean, it would be kind of a very graphical way to show a manager what's going on. Because managers don't understand this. They don't. So anyways, it's the use of a custom alert system such as that. The command rules processor can take corrective action based upon a host as well as network inputs. The open source network components that I'm using today, Snort, SSH, Zebedee, Perl, or whatever scripting language of your choice, for those who have other ones. 15 minutes. Did you want to take a break now or do you want to keep going? Okay, we'll break for 5 minutes then. What? It's already posted. It's already posted.
Are you going to get the
site? Yeah, at the end, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Basically, the next module is the anti-shoot ourselves in the foot module. Contains lists of hosts that should never be blocked. Contains trust relationships. I don't like trust relationships, but they're a fact of life, unfortunately. So if we have trusted partners, we at least don't denial of service them or block them. Contains knowledge about our network, what services should go to what hosts. If I start suddenly seeing port 22 traffic to my NT box, which never has that SSH server on it, that's a problem. Scales back the rules that might otherwise be used against these important hosts by a clever attacker. In other words, instead of doing a block, it might just do a warn. Again, it's kind of like it prevents escalation to the what I consider to be packet execution, which is drop. It communicates to the central command processor and determines actions against hosts claiming to be from our own network. In other words, spoofing attacks and things like that. The heuristic adaptive mode. Again, this is kind of the pipe dream. Would make configuring easier, would write rules dynamically. I think it's beyond my knowledge, or it's not really safe. Additional security measures. Again, I highly recommend you deploy this on an out-of-band network. Switches are like $100 or less. If you don't want to put an out-of-band network, there's several changes that you have to do. I recommend using MAC address matching, which in and of itself is not sufficient. But if you use IP address, MAC address, and if you're really smart and you have, and you're lucky enough to have a Cisco 6503, you do MAC address locking. So you lock the MAC address to the port. So if some clever hacker changes his MAC address, the port gets turned off. No more problems. Unfortunately, if you change network cards, so you do have a problem. But use SSL and certificates. Basically, you're going to be using. I recommend client and server side certificates. One of the components of this system. For the historical portion, I'm lazy. It's just use ACID. ACID is very powerful search querying capabilities, and it's fairly easy to use. Basically, only allow specific IPs to connect. You know, your sensors, your management stations, your analysis consoles. Use RSA keys and OpenSSH version 2 only. You might want to even be not even allowed password authentication, and basically require the host to have a key, which of course you've actually written a password on. So if someone compromises your host, at least they have to type in a password to get to the IDS. Rules shouldn't allow non-sensors to talk to repository. Again, why do you want someone doing ODBC, SQL inserts into your database and it's not a valid snort sensor? I mean, talk about data corruption. Cross-platform considerations. Win32 hosts comprise a large amount of the hosts you're trying to protect. They're inherently difficult and secure and need to be protected. Unix boxes are really no more secure than NT boxes. People say, sacrilege. But it's really true. Out of the box, Unix was designed in an era when everyone practiced and was nice. And basically, but the Unix has the advantage, I can control what it's doing. It's basically well documented, it's been around for a long time, and people have thought of a lot of ways to secure it. So, Unix is not a B operating system, nor will it ever be, but it is easier to secure, and you can be relatively certain that once you set it up that way, it's not going to surreptitiously blow itself up, revert back to a previous state as when you apply a service pack with NT. I mean, there's just all kinds of issues. Use an event log to syslog program. This is, again, on NT hosts, backlog or something like that, so we can dynamically monitor NT workstations on a host level. Now, this is assuming you've turned on the auditing feature of NT, and you're auditing login failures, login successes. You might be monitoring the use of certain kinds of calls. All of a sudden, why is the IIS user a member of the administrators group? I mean, those kinds of events are fairly important events. Using tripwires, we can have rules basically to look to see if certain critical files have changed, and if so, do a certain action. The current status. Basically, currently what I've done is I've set up a sensor using Snort, I've set up the bridge, I've set up the bridging firewall, I've set up a central station, and I've used ACID to review the data, and I've actually just once had a Perl script tail a log file and send a command back to the thing. And it works. Project needs. Again, I'm going to do a Q&A in the last portion of it. We may not go the whole 2 hours, but I just wanted to have the room so that we could. Basically, I need programmers. I'm not a programmer and can't write most of the tools. I can do some Perl. I'm kind of like an intermediate Perl person who can do things. I'm more of a theory person. I'm like a theoretical physicist. I'm kind of trying to broadly join varying technologies into the system. Programmers for the various modules would be necessary. Again, people with AI expertise, people with statistical mathematical knowledge. A large part of the problem with network is statistical anomalies and looking at that appropriately. We need people who don't mind documenting. I do documentation myself. I'm pretty good at graphics. So the documentation will be well done. And again, the other kinds of people that I met, there was one fellow, and I hope he's here, he was actually talking about the radar model for IDS, the idea of using a radar type approach where you use these long complicated formulas and things that they've been using for a long time in warfare, which is highly applicable to this. And I'm pretty much going to show you this. Again, network gurus, things like comparing the output on various sides of a firewall and adapting the rules to them, integrating Snort sensor log with response module, dreaming up clever network hats to do to transgressors. In other words, clever things not to punish, but to inform. Beta testers. We always need people to test. The wider variety of hardware that you test it on, the more reliable a system becomes, unless you're Microsoft. Documentation team. Too many open source projects have really crappy documentation. I can do documentation. It was my major in college. I hate it, but I can do it. And a permanent home. I'm pretty sure SourceForge will do this, but since I don't have any really code yet, they're probably going to laugh at me. So I can probably just use mine in a link, and depending on how many people are interested in doing something like that. I envision something like SourceForge, web-based discussion, upload, CVS, ideally even maybe some kind of conferencing audio-wise, because sometimes email just doesn't cut it, and I hate writing email because it's like one of the worst communication methods ever invented. Anyways, my information, I'll leave this up for a little bit so you guys can write these things down. My website basically has this presentation in Acrobat format. And by the way, you've all been socially engineered. You thought that I actually used... What do you think that I used to construct this presentation? Yep, you're right. You were not... And I exported it. Used the PDF... What? Yeah. Actually, no, the hand is not. Because if you look at here, it's actually Acrobat. That is an Acrobat thing. And also, so what I did was is I printed it to the PDF writer and embedded all the fonts so that they don't look horrible. And so anyway, so you thought that I really did it in like an elite thing like LaTeX when I really did it in PowerPoint, but don't tell anybody. Anyways, Snort's URL is up there, ACID, OpenBSD. How many more people need me to keep this up so they can write down my website? Okay, I'll keep it up for a little bit and I'll just talk about some of the other random ideas that a couple of interesting things I've wanted to do with IDSs. Right now, the way that the information is presented is terrible. It's log files running by. If you suddenly take IDS output and change it to a graphical format, and what I had, I was talking to a guy who works in submarines, and they kind of have this thing, and it goes, it's like a large rectangle, and it just kind of advances through time. And what happens is basically like a line per second or whatever you want your resolution to be. And say there's like maybe two or three or four signatures which are vital. When you see those, the line will continue. It's like it's either a horizontal or a vertical bar that runs. And it just draws a red line when it sees the signature. And what that would do is it would allow you to see important events in real time and not have to look at log files while you're continuing to do things. It's real simple, but I really haven't seen any IDSs that do that. And again, it's leveraging, taking the huge amounts of data that are coming from all the sensors and reducing it to a human readable and seeable output. Also, you have to remember that you have a lot more resolution. If you've got an average screen, you've got 1280 by 1024. Not many people are going to have 1,000-line screens. I mean, that's a lot of lines on a screen. I'd like to see someone with that. But anyways, I'm going to move it now. This last part is kind of the, I'm just going to, just to review, and then I'll be open for questions. Basically, up there, our packets from Evil Network go to static filter module, to the sensor bridge, to the firewall, to the Happy Network. Happy Network being, of course, our, you know, corporate assets, as they say. The screening router, basically this is your average Cisco router with a default set of rules, you know, turn off addresses that pretend like they're my internals and, you know, don't allow them to telnet to me and turn off your HTTP. Yes, turn off the HTTP on all your routers. Bad. these blue lines, basically are lines of communication between the sensors, and the central data gatherer. And the command processor. Now these can all, the central data gatherer and the command processor can live on one computer, but because of the intensive nature of databases, leave it a database server. That's what they're supposed to do. They're not supposed to do anything else. Well, they can, but it's dumb. Here's the various modules, anti-shooter cells in the foot, historical attack, central data gatherer. Here's the pipe dream. That's why it's kind of over here, because I don't expect it to be completed before doomsday. And basically, that's just to show what I talked about. It's kind of how the modules, and it's the best drawing that I have at this point. I'm not really good at the flowcharts and those kinds of things. Anyways, so my basic goal in this whole presentation is just to make people think a little bigger in terms of IDSs. Again, I've seen some papers on it, but it's a lot of disparate things that are not well documented and not well coordinated. And so it would be just kind of nice to have something. Several gentlemen came up here and said that they've already got something that does this. The problem is how come I don't know about it? I mean, I read Security Focus. I read like 6 or 7 of the different things, and I have not heard anything about these projects. And that's the problem is there's no – there's hackers are wonderful at communicating, all of us, but let's just go farther. Criminals, which are not of any of us, of course, are very good at communicating. They have well-designed lines of trust. They have all kinds of, you know, trust webs and things. But the community on the other side, everyone's trying to make money and no one's talking to each other. And so attackers, really, in my opinion, are two steps up because they've got their groups, they've got their camaraderie, they've got the human relationships that make defending a network easier. And they've got those webs of trust. That's why hackers are winning, other than the fact that it's easier to destroy than it is to create. Well, crackers. Everyone gets really persnickety when I use the term hacker, but anyways. That's pretty much it as far as this goes. I'm open for questions now. Gentlemen, over there. Recourse Technologies? Was this the hogwash? Was this hogwash that one gentleman meant? What? Mantrap? Ooh, not that one with all the vulnerabilities. Oh, okay. The problem, I'm not trying to diss the people who make these products. They're very valuable. The problem being is they don't fit into the model. They can be integrated into it, but vendors who are releasing things for profit have no vested interest in sharing their information. There's just no way that if I spend $1 million developing this intrusion detection database that I'm going to share it with anybody. I'm going to want you to spend $50,000 on my product and lock you into my architecture. So I'm not a communist or anything like that. I just I mean I work in, you know, banking for God's sakes. But at the same time, I do see where this kind of a craft. This is a craft. This is not just a program. This is something that I want to care about and I want to be good quality. And like I said, a lot of commercial products, I would say 80% at least, are just crap. They don't work, they lie, they use proprietary encryption algorithms. You'll never be broken, our product is 100% secure. And then the next day there's an exploit. I mean, so anyways, any questions? Sir in the green? Okay. My first question to you. If you're a roach exterminator, would you go into a building without understanding what you were trying to kill? Well, that's why I said it's a pipe dream. The heuristic module that you're referring to. That module itself, I think, is a pipe dream. And to be honest, I think that you have to realize that a large part of the IT community is incapable of doing this stuff. And so at least if there's a 1-2-3 step on how to do it, more people at least attempt it. And yes, you're right. You can get yourselves into big problems with this. You've already gotten two. There's a lot of other people. Sir, over there. Yes, you. That is something that's a good idea. I think, the question was, is if the communication lines are broken, can the sensor act on its own? You certainly could have a limited subset of the database for critical events on the sensor, yes. So you could define like a minimalistic set of rules that if it sees this, it does these things. It could be done. Let's guess. Person over there on you, yes. Right. Well, you have to remember that it's called synergy. It's not each individual part, but the sum of the parts. And the sum of the parts makes it, I think, more comprehensive. Well, if they existed. it makes it more comprehensive and better than any of the commercial offerings I've seen. So Snort by itself is but one thing and could be replaced. Everything in this, the idea is any of the programs and any of the modules can be interchanged or removed or added to or whatever. And that's another part that I haven't really mentioned, is having a centralized framework, a descriptive language for both attacks and responses, as well as a centralized language for rule processing. Again, how are we going to describe network attacks? Person in the back there with the, you. Yeah, you. I can't hear you. Here, I'll come over there and you can speak. It'll be a lot easier to hear you. Wait until we're here, then you can start.
On your database architecture, you have suggested RAID 0. That's not necessarily going to be a very good solution, because while there's a, what we use in database design these days is basically RAID 0 plus 1, and Sun and Veritas implements it differently, but the premises is the same. You have a built-in hardware high availability. Also, write once, read many drives, warm drives, they're slow by their nature. Is there, maybe we should include a SRAM cache on it?
Actually, the deal with the, it wouldn't be done in real time. The worms are for archival, which means at night when it's less busy, it, you know, you might have to have a, and also load balancing, that's another thing I didn't cover. You could actually have a multiple sensors. You shut one down, you offload the database, take it back online. And this gentleman here.
I just had a really quick comment on the archiving. You would maybe want to store that at a, for a period of time and then just take those logs offline and do the archiving or the storage onto CDR or Worm as like a nearline type of thing. It happens on a totally separate system and happens like, you know, maybe you're logging a couple weeks after the actual date.
Kind of like secondary versus primary storage. You like move it off to like a bigger facility. Yeah. Basically, they say RAID 0 is bad. And yes, for large databases, like I said, I'm not an expert in it. Only reason I did it with RAID 0 is to keep up with the data flows because it's very fast. And 0 plus, I only had two disks. So, anyways. I guess you. Just a moment.
No problem. I notice on your diagram you have your sensor on the outside of your firewall, and I know this is somewhat of a jihad between the philosophies, but what is your, I guess, philosophy on putting your sensor on the outside as opposed to either having an inside or a dual sensor?
It's not or, it's all. You have a sensor on the outside, you have a sensor on the inside, and you have a sensor on everything. I didn't draw it on both, and unfortunately my laptop just ran out of power.
The way I understand you're presenting this, you're assuming local access to all of the segments that you're managing or trying to watch with this. How would you deal with remote?
How do you deal with remote? Well, basically, if it's a remote site, chances are you can send the data. I don't recommend this. You could send a limited compressed data stream across a VPN. That could be done. Now, the out-of-band thing falls down in that case. You would probably have to have a bridged sensor. This is kind of, I just thought of this. You could send your data stream to a remote sensor that doesn't really exist. Have it decrypted, have the sensor listening, and then have it record the traffic from there and act on it accordingly. So that's how you could do it. Now, bear in mind, that would be probably a lot of data. Well, to some degree. That's why you have Zebedee or something, you know, that's relatively, hopefully, cryptographically secure. Anybody else? Oh, how about the gentleman over there? I'll be right over. Where are you? Oh, there you are. Excuse me.
In your design, that architecture you had up on the screen, well, you used to have up on the screen, seems like you're relying heavily on Snort. Now, I love Snort. We use it at work. But from what I can hear, that Snort has a limitation with IP fragment reassembly. So I was just wondering, in your instance, in your architecture that you have now, how do you get around that? Do you use other products?
You basically have another thing running alongside Snort on the sensor, if need be. Again, this is not completed. Snort is not perfect. And the fragment reassembly is a very valid thing. Now, there is an easy way around your problem. Drop fragments. Just drop all fragments. Just don't allow them. There's no... I never see fragmentation on my networks. I mean, basically, if a host is sending me 300-byte things, it's probably a hacker. Most people use Ethernet. Now, if you don't, you have to analyze your traffic and make that policy decision. But on our networks and all the networks I've ever been on, fragmentation is not a problem. I just don't allow defragment. I just don't allow fragments from external IPs. Yeah. Internally, it's different. But questions? Okay, sir.
Okay. One. All right. One, how do you, with the bridge network, basically how well is this going to scale?
That's the nice thing. It'll scale quite well because you can actually have multiprocessor hosts. You can go to Sun architecture if you need to with 64-bit PCI. You can have multiple sensors looking at different things. It's cheap. So now you can suddenly have 6 bridging sensors doing what they charge you. I think it's $100,000. There's something called a top shelf, I think, where it basically splits the data stream up, and they have, like, you've got 8 of these $10,000 IDSs all doing parallel processing. So you can do the same thing.
You're running Snort on that local machine. You're going to throw a gigabit Ethernet card in there to watch all that traffic. That's very...
I unfortunately have not gone to gigabit Ethernet. That's a problem for every IDS at this point. They claim they can sniff gig. I highly doubt it. Without ASICs and specialized hardware, I think the gig and terabit problems are large ones. I don't have a solution.
What I'm getting at is the bridged, where you're doing it with the bridging, might not be the best way of doing it. Doing it with a span port might be a better...
Again, yeah, the span port. The only problem with doing a span port is you lose the ability to filter and to dynamically respond. And I've actually done some at least at 100 meg, with an old Pentium 400 with nasty cards. I was at 3% power processor utilization with a full rule set. About 900. I mean, that was the full Snort rule set. Now, that was my measurements. Now, mind you, it might not have been full.
With a Pentium 2 300, 1,000 rules, it's 30% CPU usage on a 2.7 megabit connection. So this is definitely a problem with CPU usage.
What database? Are you using database? Oh, okay. Straight to log file. Also, I would ask you, which operating system were you using? Linux, yeah, that's your problem. Sorry. Sorry. Any other questions? Okay, sir. Just a moment.
This is just a general comment on Snort, because I caught the presentation at Black Hat. The new 1.8 version, I believe, fixes the fragmentation problem that someone mentioned earlier. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. Likewise, he also hates the word lightweight, and the only reason he uses it now is in terms of the footprint of Snort, is that it's still a small but robust IDS.
This is kind of a funny thing, and I hope there aren't any people from NFR here, but I'm going to tell this anyway. A friend of mine was actually there, and he was talking to the author of Snort, and he basically, NFR offered to buy it, to give him $500,000 for it. And he said no, because they said ours sucks, because the processing's so slow. On NFR, just not to blow the product, it's a good product for what it is, but on 100 meg, they can only scan 30 megs per second on a 100 meg link. And that was in 99, so it's not entirely fair. But Snort, I mean, I'm scanning that traffic with a much less processor, and I'm at like 5% maximum. Questions? Gentlemen over there, I'll be right over. Unless you want to stand up and shout. Yeah. Worldwide. Yeah. Your primary problem is going to be getting the data streams to the centralized sensor. Now, you could use a modularized approach where you don't actually do everything in real time. You would have a sensor out, and at night you'd replicate or something like that. That is one approach to the problem. Another, if you've got lots of bandwidth, is just send it through a VPN. Not that I recommend that, but it could be done. What time is it? 5:22? Okay. Any questions? Any more? Otherwise, I'll... Oh, okay. You? Okay.
Wouldn't it be easier to have a modular design allow you have multiple collection points at each site and then replicate that data and that database information back?
Yes. Good idea. I mean, I that's what I mean. That's why I want people to talk to me and send me letters. And I mean, this is the idea, is to exchange ideas, because I am not the expert or the authority on intrusion detection, and there are probably a lot of people who are a lot smarter than I am in this, and that's the whole point of the project, is to use a collective group intelligence to combat a very complex problem. Questions? Just a moment, sir. I'll be right there. Here's the mic.
You had mentioned the use of transparent bridging firewalls under OpenBSD. I just wanted to pull the crowd. I do the same thing, and I found them to be very, very good. I haven't found any attacks against them yet. Has anybody in this room found anything?
The question, although you heard it, is has anyone found a way to attack a transparent bridging firewall? If anyone has, can you raise your hand? I don't see anyone who has yet. So that means probably they're relatively safe, not to say that they're perfect. My own theories, basically, you'd have to do some layer 2 stuff. I mean, the only way to attack it would be to do layer 2 stuff. Or rules-based. You know, I mean, other than that, because you don't have an IP to attack, from a remote standpoint, you'd have to be on the same physical segment. I mean, that's really the only way that you'd begin to have it. And then you still have to know it's there. Questions? Okay, gentleman in the green, I'll be right over. Wait until I give you the mic.
What about the single point of failure issues with using this bridging? Doesn't it funnel everything through one point that if it dies, your network's down?
Yes, and that's why you can use load balancers with multiple sensors. Again, for the duration of this, I didn't put it in because that's complex. You set up some HSRP, Stonebeat, something like that. One goes down, you use failover to the other, either with a VRRP type implementation, or you just have I recommend a serial cable between the two. Hell of a lot more reliable than Ethernet. Questions? I'll go over here. Just a moment, sir.
I guess this is off the topic, but a little bit. When you're talking before about kind of a subnet shun rule, and if you're going to pick on Asian Pacific, if you're going to make that decision, and this is just off the top of my head, does it make sense to actually build a list of those places that you feel you'd never want traffic from and just take them out at the beginning?
Yes. Yes, it does. Like I said, anything that you can do to reduce the amount of people who are connecting to your network is going to increase your security. And it's profiling. It is no different than racial profiling. You are profiling a part of the country based on attacking. So there's the whole ethical implications with that. And, you know, again, but it's a business. But from a business point of view, if you are a bank, you're an American bank, you don't do any business with China, why should you allow traffic from China to your bank website? Because they probably are never going to open an account there anyway. I mean, really. I mean, there's maybe a small chance, but... Again, that's my belief. It's not a dogma. Questions? Anyone else? Oh, okay. Just a sec. Gentleman in the long hair, I'll give you the microphone.
Have you considered separating your sensors and your firewalling rules, have them on different systems? That way you don't have to have the sensor be reacting?
You could. Again, I was trying to reduce the complexity of the system by having the two things on one, because then you start running into NICs and cards and, you know, lots of ports. And it can be done, though. Again, that's what I mean. That's why I like it being open source. If you say, I like having sensors that way, you do it that way. And if I like my sensors my way, I do it my way. And kind of like in New York. Anyways, questions? Any more? I guess I will terminate this then. Thank you for your attention.